So the fact that there's no longer a supermajority in both houses does not mean that you can't do things.
This is Family Policy Matters, a weekly radio show and podcast from NC Family, designed to better inform listeners about the critical issues of the day and encourage you to be voices of persuasion for family values in your communities. And now your host, NC Family President John Rustin.
Welcome to Family Policy Matters. This week, we're pleased to bring you into one of NC Family's monthly Cornerstone Community calls. The Cornerstone Community is the designation we have given to a special group of visionary partners who have invested deeply in the work of NC Family through prayer, partnership, and financial assistance as we strive to make North Carolina the most pro-life and pro-family state in the nation. We invite these partners to join us for a monthly Cornerstone Roundtable conference call where they get the inside scoop on what's happening on important issues facing North Carolina families. In January, we were pleased to have a special guest join us, former Speaker Pro Tempore of the North Carolina House of Representatives, Representative Paul Skip Stamm. As a state lawmaker spanning nearly three decades and as a leader in the House for many of those years, Skip brought a seasoned and unique perspective to our discussion about the upcoming session of the North Carolina General Assembly, which convened right at the end of January. Facilitating the call is NC Family's Communications Director, Tracy Griggs.
Skip, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, good afternoon, Tracy.
So the dynamics of the North Carolina General Assembly have changed since the last election. Republicans held on to majorities in both the state House and Senate, but lost supermajorities. So how do you think this is going to affect how things are going to get done down there?
Let me go back to a little history. In 95 to 98, Republicans had a majority in the House, but not the Senate. But what happened in those years? Charter schools started. Parental consent before abortion. In other words, you don't have to even have a majority of Republicans to enact legislation. In 2011-12 was the first time in 140 years that we actually had majorities in both House and Senate, but it was not a veto-proof majority in the House. So the fact that there's no longer a supermajority in both houses does not mean that you can't do things. Nevertheless, there are reduced majorities, so that means there are reduced opportunities for aggressive action. But it doesn't mean there are no opportunities.
Well, that's a very hopeful perspective. So what's your sense of what will be the top priorities of the leadership this year?
In general, with the budget, they'll probably be wanting to hold spending down to the what's called the Tabor level, that is, inflation plus population growth, and that'll be a big challenge because the governor will want to spend more and they'll want to spend less, and so there'll be a lot of back and forth.
So let's talk specifics now. You were a leader in the pro-life movement in this state for over 30 years and still are. So what are you hearing on that front? What might be coming down the line on pro-life issues, do you think?
Here's my perspective on that. Of course, we had parental consent and pretty much did away with the state abortion fund when Republicans did not even have a majority in the Senate. But starting in 11 and 12, we passed about 10 laws, including women's right to know, a lot of insurance issues. And they were pretty contentious, although one of the amazing things is almost none of them had lawsuits successful against them except one part of the ultrasound. And then currently in litigation is effectively a ending of abortions after 20 weeks. That particular provision went through with no discussion, no debate, no controversy in committee, on the floor. And it even took Planned Parenthood a year after it went into effect to even realize it was there. However, it's been 2015 since the Assembly, that's 4 years, has been asked to actually vote on anything pro-life. In 2017-18, there were some very good provisions put in the budget funding our pregnancy care centers for ultrasound, a lot of money for ultrasounds and that kind of thing. But that was part of a 400-page budget, and so they were not really a big issue. It's probably time to have a couple of bills actually voted on up or down, try to pass them. I think we can. Two things that were introduced in 2018 or 17, and I think we'd have a chance, are one, a proposal to stop what's called dismemberment abortions. That is when a child is cut up in the womb after being fully formed and pulled out piece by piece. That's, you know, surgical abortions, usually, you know, in the second trimester. 10 states now have that. A couple of them are in litigation, and it's pretty hard to vote against, I would think. The second one is to encourage a new procedure. You may know that almost half of now abortions are done by a pill rather than by surgery. But if after that first pill is given, if progesterone treatments are started within the first, say, 3 days, two-thirds of those pregnancies can be carried safely to term, and you have a, you know, a baby. And I would think a lot of women might have second thoughts after they've had their first thought. So I think that's one that we would have a good shot on.
So can I just get a quick clarification on the abortion pill? Is that, what would you envision that to be, that these women that have taken the first abortion pill would have to be informed that they could change their minds?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's the proposal. Okay. You can't tell the doctor what to say, but what you can do is tell the doctor after you've given a woman the first pill, which is used to be called RU486, to hand her a piece of paper that says the state of North Carolina advises you that this is potentially reversible. If you're interested, call this toll-free number to the reverse pill hotline. There are about 400 doctors nationwide who know how to do this, and it's not that difficult. It's just injections or pills for progesterone. This basically counteracts that first pill.
Right, and this is something we don't hear a whole lot about, so that seems like some important information.
They normally tell them, okay, you have to, in about 3 days, take this second pill, which is a different thing, which starts contractions going. Okay. But if they can take this progesterone before those contractions start going, about two-thirds of the time they can have a successful pregnancy.
You're listening to Family Policy Matters, a radio show and podcast from NC Family. You can sign up to receive an updated podcast each week on iTunes or any podcast app. To listen to the show online and for more resources that will help you be a voice of persuasion in your community, go to our website at ncfamily.org.
Well, let's move on to school choice, because we know that you also have worked very hard in years past to promote school choice in North Carolina. We also know that the governor has come out against some of the funding for school choice. What projections might you have on what may happen regarding this?
Long story short, is we're trying to get the amounts given for scholarships based on a percentage of what's given for through the public schools. In one case, 80%, another case, 85%, so that it goes up with inflation rather than having the set amount. And not only does it mean you wouldn't have to adjust it every few years for inflation, but it also makes it more transparent to legislators and the public that this saves money. It doesn't cost 100% of what it costs to subsidize the child in a traditional public school. We'll also propose, I hope, a slight increase in the amount of money someone can make and still qualify for it. Some of the rest of it is sort of technical, but there's enough money there now for opportunity scholarships, but they always have a waiting list for disability scholarships, and that would seem to be something that would be really hard for the governor to complain about. So we are going to ask for an increase in the disability scholarships as well. going up from about $13 million this year, up about another $2 million next year.
Okay. Thank you. Let's jump into gambling for a moment. I know this is another issue that's dear to your heart, and you've worked very hard to control it. Any thoughts on what might be coming down the pike on that one?
Yes. One of the vetoes that was not overridden by the governor, and thankfully, the governor was right on this, related to casino nights that passed the assembly that really expanded local gambling and really was a precursor to getting all these video games all over the state, and the governor vetoed it. It wouldn't surprise me if that came back up again, and I would hope he would stick with us again and veto it again.
And I would add that one provision in that bill, an earlier version of the bill, would have allowed for gambling casinos in individual homes, not just for nonprofits. So there was a very extensive version of the bill that was introduced initially, and as it went through the House and the Senate, it got pared down a good bit, and we were very appreciative of the governor's veto on that particular bill because it did help to forestall that from getting enacted.
Yes, and especially new proposals for sports betting. This has been facilitated by a decision of the U.S. Supreme Court, which basically says it's up to the states. And you've got, you know, chairmen of committees that are talking about regulating and taxing and legalizing sports betting.
I'm sorry, I would just say I would add to that that there is a huge push nationally to expand sports gambling all over the country, not only the daily fantasy sports that we hear about, which is FanDuel and DraftKings, but having national broadcast television, ESPN, and these other broadcast and cable sports channels be facilitators of significant sports gambling in the country. And so we are really just at the tip of the iceberg as it relates to that. Fortunately, we've been able the last 2 years to defeat proposals that would legalize daily fantasy sports gambling in North Carolina. But as Skip, as you're saying, these efforts are definitely going to continue because there are millions and millions, if not billions of dollars at stake.
Skip, before we let you go, we've been talking a lot in our end-of-year mailings to people about how important state legislation is and the effect that it has and ripple effect kind of across the nation, and how important the kind of work that we do here at the Family Policy Council is to not only what happens in our state, but what happens and reverberates across the country. Could you just speak on that just a little bit?
Well, I'll just give one example. I remember I mentioned the dismemberment by abortion law. If it hadn't already passed in 10 states and in effect in some, we'd be less likely to be able to get it through in North Carolina because precedents are set. And so some of the precedents we set in school choice, particularly, and also our pro-life laws, have been used in other states because they see it worked. Eugenics compensation. North Carolina was the first in the nation to do it. Virginia followed a year later because they read about what we did.
What about for people that want to hear more about the things that you've written about? You have a website. Do you want to give us the address for that?
Yes. Paulstam.info, PAULSTAM.info, and go under articles. There's lots of good articles.
You've been listening to a special edition of Family Policy Matters with an inside look at one of NC Family's monthly Cornerstone Community Calls with special guest and former representative Skip Stamm. If you would like to find out how you can partner with NC Family and become a part of the Cornerstone community, visit our website at ncfamily.org/cornerstone. That's ncfamily.org/cornerstone. To listen to the show online, and for more resources that will help you be a voice of persuasion for family values in your community, visit our website at ncfamily.org and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.